Morning again.
Morning.
This is an interlocutory appeal from the denial of summary judgment on the issue of excessive force. And the primary issue in this case is I believe the district court misapplied the Robinson versus County of Solano case with regard to the issue of pointing weapons.
Well, why don't you, this is very factually, it seems to me that this, just speaking for myself, that this case really depends a lot on the facts. Would you just take us through what happened here?
Okay.
In the light that we have to view them?
Yes. The officers knocked on the door to serve a search warrant at around 7 in the morning. The officers had their weapons drawn. They came in with weapons drawn.
What were they searching for?
Cultivated marijuana. They immediately find the wife, Penny Miller, in the house, turn around, handcuff her, place her in a seat. The daughter is sitting in the dining room near the mother, asked to get moved next to the mother. They accommodate that. The mother says that the officers had guns drawn pointing in the direction of both of them at that time. Other officers have gone down to the bedroom and found Chris Miller sleeping. And Chris Miller alleges that Officer Hutchinson put a gun to his head or to his forehead with a gun cocked.
Who is that? Is that the son? Or
no, that is the father.
The Chris, father. Okay.
Chris Miller's the father. There's a father, mother, and daughter to wake him up, and then gets him out of bed, tells him to put his pants on, and then leads him roughly by the arm, and he believes a gun is pointed to his back, but he's not watching, to an interview room where he's forcefully seated by Officer Hutchinson. A few moments later, he's got, I can't remember which, one of the Millers has gotten up to go put the dogs into the garage. They have two dogs, both weighing, I think, over 40 pounds. Once the dogs are put in the garage, all the Millers say the guns are holstered. And at that point, Mr. Miller goes on to allege that Tracy Grant conducts three interviews with him. He says he's properly Mirandized, and they're not claiming a Miranda violation, but that he screamed at him for the course of the three interviews, denied him breakfast, and didn't let him use the restroom until about 11 o'clock.
Is one of these three identified as a suspect, or?
Yes, Chris Miller is the suspect, and he and his wife are arrested for cultivating marijuana at the scene, and he's detained.
Was he a suspect before the officers arrived, or was he a suspect based on what they perceive in the search?
I think he was a suspect before they arrived, and clearly when they found the grow, the initial interview.
The warrant. The warrant was a search warrant, right? Not an arrest warrant.
Yes, that's true. But I believe the officers had seen Chris Miller at the hydroponic store, which is why that caused them to focus on Mr. Miller. They did not know.
So part of the what you're saying is, at least part of the probable cause showing to support the issuance of the search warrant implicated Chris Miller.
Actually not really, because the warrant was silent as to that. The warrant began with the garbage search, so the warrant was silent as to that.
Is this the same, by the way, is this the same, I forgot the acronym, but the same unit that involved in all three cases?
Yes, the marijuana eradication team. But the only allegations as to the point, clearly we're not disputed. The judge, district court judge, ruled that Officer Hutchinson putting the gun to Mr. Miller's head, if that's true, should go to a jury, and we're not appealing that. The part we're appealing has to do with the mere pointing of guns at the mother and the daughter and Mr. Miller.
All right, now getting to that issue, seems to me this case is just fundamentally different from Robinson, because here, and unlike any other case I know of, the persons at whom the guns were pointed were handcuffed and in restraints. Not true in any other case that I know of.
Well, Your Honor, if you follow the rationale of and again, it's a qualified immunity argument.
But isn't that true, though, about
yes.
the facts of this case?
That's true. Oh, no, well,
so they couldn't,
no,
the one, the daughter, they couldn't present any danger to the officer.
The daughter was a young girl who was not handcuffed, but the mother was handcuffed. Your Honor, my argument with regard to Robinson focuses in large part on the concurrence which said that basically pointing gun, in their view, the view of three of your colleagues, felt that pointing the gun could never be excessive force under the Fourth Amendment. And to me, that indicates, as of the date of that decision, at least before that decision was rendered, an en banc decision, the law in the Ninth Circuit was unclear whether it could be.
Okay, this is it, it's established that this was pre-Solano. Is that right?
Yes.
This activity
occurred. This was in 1999, and Robinson versus Solano was decided in 2002.
Okay. And so at that point, the law was not clearly established, at least in this circuit, that pointing guns was a problem.
Well, here's my problem. The law of excessive force was in existence, was it not?
Absolutely.
Isn't that really what this
right.
is?
Right. Yes, Your Honor. But the Robinson versus County of Solano case dealt with a specific issue of whether pointing a weapon constituted excessive force. And in 2002, three Ninth Circuit judges in a concurrence, now, they weren't the majority opinion, but in a concurrence...
I know who wrote the majority opinion,
right.
That person wasn't handcuffed, wasn't apparently dangerous, wasn't being... there was no warrant suspecting him of any criminal activity.
In Robinson?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to make that point, that was his argument, that there was no reason to be pointing guns at him, which is the same argument that they're making in this case, that there was no reason to be, that the guns were pointed unnecessarily, so that constitutes excessive force. And whether or not, under these facts, I think after Robinson, under these facts, if you believe the plaintiffs, that could constitute excessive force. My argument is before that, the law was not clear that mere pointing a gun could, and they're entitled to the qualified immunity of good faith because of that.
No, but you say, I think Judge Shore's point is, but the law of excessive force generally is quite clear, and to me it's a stretch to rely on Robinson because of the facts of this case are clearly distinguishable. Namely, again, I repeat, these subjects were in handcuffs, and which is not true in Robinson.
Robinson was not in handcuffs, but it was the same argument that he was not a threat and that he was not acting violent. And they could see that he was...
I know that, but they had reports of irrational behavior and so forth. Yeah. And he had shot a dog in Manitou. So, there are things they didn't know about. They didn't know what this person was going to do. But even then, it's possible for the pointing of a gun to be excessive force. But my point is, even before Robinson, if you have a person sitting in the chair in handcuffs, seems to me it's pretty clear to point a gun at that person is excessive force.
Well, you're right. Also, I think understand the facts of this case. The officers had the guns out until the dogs were put away. They say the mother and the daughter were sitting over there, and someone, as an officer, had a gun. It wasn't trained at their head like this. A gun was out. When you're in a house, an officer in a house, if you move somewhere, a gun could be pointed at someone. And if this is allowed, the state of Fourth Amendment violation.
I think you're getting into a factual dispute now.
Well, how long did the search take?
The entire search, I think it went from about 7 o'clock till about 11 or 11:15. But the guns were put away within the first... I believe it's 10 or 15 minutes after they secured the dogs. So the guns were not out the entire time.
You see, 15 minutes before, everybody's in handcuffs, and 15 minutes before you put a gun away? I don't think that favors your case.
Well, Your Honor...
All I'm saying is, there's a factual dispute. If there is, you can't win this motion on summary judgment.
But, Your Honor, if it seems to me if three Ninth Circuit judges don't believe that the law was clear, how can you say a reasonable officer should have believed the law was clear? Because their argument wasn't that pointing guns.
Well, you're just focusing on this little narrow aspect of.
Well, but that gets as to three of the officers in the case. That's the only reason they're in the case is because they allegedly had guns out. The other, I guess,
and that's the test. The question is, was the law clearly established that pointing guns under these circumstances was a violation?
And I think under Fuller versus Vines and Robinson versus Solano County, the answer is clearly no.
Well, Fuller had nothing to do with excessive force.
Well, the court felt it necessary to distinguish Fuller and say that it didn't mean what some people have interpreted to mean. So, again, we are at step. What is true?
All Robinson says about force is what's apparent on the face of the case, is that it has nothing to do with excessive force.
I believe I'm out of town. Time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, Paul Turley for Chris Penny and Corrine Miller. There are a lot of factual disputes about what happened that morning.
What's the range of dispute with respect to how long the guns were out?
The guns were out between 15 and 20 minutes after they were handcuffed, were pointed at both Penny Miller and Corrine Miller, a 10-year-old girl, and were pointed at Chris Miller after Chris Miller was woken up. The mother and child were awake when the police arrived, were put down on a couch. The mother was handcuffed and placed there. The dogs were already outside. That's one of our factual contentions, and they were put further away. They were not running around, and they were not large animals that would justify the police having their guns out.
All right. He says 10 to 15. You say 15 to
20.
20.
Yeah.
And this is from the time the officers got there?
The time they arrived.
Right, okay.
And once they arrived, Penny Miller opened the door.
So the dispute is with respect to whether it's a 5-minute dispute in terms of how,
yes,
how long the guns were out. Okay.
And I don't.
But what's your argument on the law being clearly established? What is it that you rely on for the proposition that the law was clearly established that holding the guns for, let's say, even 20 minutes was a violation of the Constitution?
I think, as I cited in my brief, the law that regards excessive force would state that they shouldn't be using potentially deadly force, which is terribly frightening to people that are handcuffed. We're not focusing on the moment before they were handcuffed, when they had the guns drawn out, or when they entered the residence where they didn't know what the situation was.
Okay, but we're not looking at whether or not it was excessive force. We're looking at it because of the posture of this case in terms of whether it was clearly established at that time that that constituted excessive force. And I'm wondering, what case are you relying on? Obviously, this is pre-Solano, so we can't talk about Solano.
Right. Well, as to Corrine Miller, I think I set forth an argument in my brief that if you don't have clear circuit law, police officers may be on notice to look to other circuits to see what's clearly established. And there was a Seventh Circuit case that existed at the time that said that it was excessive force to point guns at a 10-year-old boy. I may be misstating that, but it was very similar in age. Somebody that posed no threat and was...
What was the name of that Seventh Circuit case?
McDonald.
Okay.
And I think it's cited in my brief. And as to Corrine Miller, I would suggest their position is that Robinson must have overruled McDonald, if McDonald applied, as I suggest it applies, because there was no circuit law at this time on that. There was no circuit law.
Well, let me ask you this. Speaking of there's no circuit law, what's the law on, whether something's clearly established if there's no circuit law?
As I set forth in my brief, that you'll look to decisional law in other circuits, maybe. You'll look to...
Do you agree? Do you agree with your adversary that the only force that this is like the Robinson case, and that the only force that we're concerned with here is the pointing of a gun?
No, I'm focusing on that right now. The other forces that were used are not only the waking Mr. Miller up, carrying him down. There's the four-hour interview where Officer Grant, who was in charge of the MET, was screaming at my client. They say it was three different interviews, but it was really a four-hour barrage of time where my client was saying, everything I'm doing is legal under state law. I have a doctor's recommendation. I've got all of this stuff. I only have a few plants. What's the problem here? And he was being yelled at and berated when he tried to get up to relieve a leg cramp at one point, because he has a serious medical condition. He was thrown back down into the chair. There was lots of force that was used against Mr. Miller, and this was all after he was subdued, woken up, handcuffed, brought down to be interviewed, never offered any resistance.
Well, let me ask you this. Is the only claim on behalf of Corrine, no, I forget which is the daughter and which is
Corrine.
The you represent both of them. They're both plaintiffs?
Yes.
Is the only force that you argue is excessive that was used against them the pointing of the gun?
Yeah, as to Corrine and Penny Miller, the pointing of the guns was the only force that we used directly against them. And Corrine Miller, as to them, Corrine and Penny Miller, it was after Penny Miller was handcuffed. Corrine Miller was never handcuffed And so, but she was a 10-year-old. It was clearly apparent to the officers her age. And as to Chris, there was multiple acts by several different officers, Hutchinson mostly, who wakes him up and then handcuffs him, drags him down the hallway, and then Grant and Hutchinson again, who puts him in the chair on two different occasions. And Chris Miller had bruises on his arms because of the encounter that he acquired after he was handcuffed. And that seems to me to be significant, particularly with Robinson. They were responding to a call that shots had been fired. And so when they came upon the scene, they didn't know what they were going to encounter. At some point, very near after they entered this residence, they knew exactly what they were encountering, which was a suburban house in suburbs of Sacramento with a man and a woman and their 10-year-old child and a guy who was claiming that he was growing somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 or 12 cannabis plants legally because he had a doctor's recommendation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The case just argued is submitted for decision. We'll hear.